My name is Jennifer Hazelhorst, and I'm doing an interview with Richard DePiggin and his wife, Susan. The date is 11/17/2001, and the interview is taking place at the DePiggin household. At this time, I'm going to ask them to say their name and spell it completely for me.
Susan DePiggin.
Susan, S-U-S-A-N.
D-E-P-I-G-I-A-N.
Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, DePiggin, D-E-P-I-G-I-A-N.
Okay, at this time I'm going to do a sound check and make sure everything's okay. Okay, everything went great, and so we're going to go ahead and start. Richard, can you tell me when you were born?
1926. May 7th, in Granite City. I believe it was St. Elizabeth's Hospital. At the age of 5, I was exposed to the community center by going to kindergarten.
And that would be Lincoln?
At Lincoln Place. I had several instructors or teachers. The main one was Miss Prather, but under her were several others. Alice Sablitsky and Louise Matkaroff, I believe. I think I have that correct. But those two I remember very distinctly. They were very good teachers. And we had all kinds of activities in kindergarten. And from kindergarten, of course, I assume several years passed when we began to go to Sunday school. Sunday school was held at the community center also. At that particular time, I don't believe we had an Armenian church. If we had, I don't remember.
I can say you did not. The Armenian church, I could even tell you who was the first one buried, and it's built around the 19, after we were married, 1950 sometime. Matbozian was the first one buried in the church.
That may be true, however.
They may have had a...
The church existed, but it happened to be the Macedonian or the Bulgarian church. And the Armenians bought it. At what point in time, I don't remember, but I know we went to Sunday school. I wasn't exposed to the church until later on.
Was it an Armenian Sunday school? Or just
no,
a Sunday
it was
school?
Just a Sunday school.
That's what most of us.
Just a Sunday school. But everything centered around the community center. All of the activities that I remember growing up, basketball, I did some woodcraft. These were in the later years, and boxing. And we kept out of trouble by having a community house. If we hadn't had that, we'd have been in rough shape.
Now I know Miss Prather was the one that founded the community house, and she, I'm talking to some other residents of Lincoln Place, I had found that she would make them work outside for shoes and stuff like that. Did she have that sort of impact in
your
life?
Well, she had great impact because she was the director of the community center. But I didn't have too much exposure to her, but we knew that she was the mainstay because any activity that was performed, that was by her direction or through her direction. Mm-hmm. So she had great influence and kept the community together. And whether it was Armenians, Macedonians, Bulgarians, Hungarians, Mexicans, you name it, we had the whole kit and caboodle. In those early days, that's all I remember of the community center. If Mom wanted me, I was at the community center, regardless of what time of day or night. but we managed to get in at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the evenings all the time. So they knew exactly where we were all the time. So they had no problem with the kids growing up. And we attended Washington School from first grade on to sixth grade. From the sixth grade, we went to Central Junior High, seventh and eighth grade, and then from there to Grand City High School, community high school.
Now, was that when it was split, the high school?
No, we didn't have the north or south. It was just Granite City Community High School. And I attended high school in 1940 to 1944. 1944, I was drafted into the service. Spent 2 years in the service.
Now, what branch of the service?
In the infantry. Mm-hmm. When I served for 1 year and then re-enlisted after that 1 year of service into the regular army and was shipped overseas. But during my time in the service, after my basic training, I became an instructor or cadre to teach other people. So I was relatively outstanding in whatever I did.
He was. I wasn't, but he was.
And shipped overseas to, spent a year in Vienna, and from the infantry I was transferred into the military police, became first sergeant of a company, and I was a staff sergeant out of basic training and shipped overseas, became first sergeant and put into a military police battalion. And during occupation, this was in 1946, we were patrolling the international zone with the British, the French, and the Russians. So we had, that was our tour of duty.
And how old do you think you were at this?
I was, I would have been 20 years old when all this took place. And came back home. And but mother and dad had moved from Lincoln Place to St. Louis, and I wasn't aware of that at the time. So when I got out of the service at the port of embarkation in New York, I came home to Lincoln Place and found out that my mom and dad had moved to St. Louis. And this is where I met Sue. She lived a couple blocks away from me. And my sister became good friends with Susie when my parents had moved into St. Louis.
So you have to understand almost the clannishness of Armenians. In fact, probably a lot of ethnic groups. Because an Armenian family moving into the German area that I live just would have been like if you went to the middle of Egypt and found another American, and lo and behold, from Belleville or something, no less. I mean, you just naturally migrate to those people. So even though they were relative strangers, my dad invited them over for dinner. You know, that would just be the thing to do. And it would give you thousands of incidents of Armenian clannishness. But I think going back to Lincoln Place, the things that I noticed when I would visit during the summers, because I didn't live there, was the cohesiveness of the group. And I think you even see that today when you see a lot of Spanish together, you see the Armenians. It was their strength and their power. I mean, it gave them, because the parents, and I've heard this from Rich, and I know my parents, the parents came from a very oppressed, and they were young when they came. So they were afraid of the authority figure. And they would, you know, they would stick more together. They would tell you, don't talk back, you know, don't say anything. There are just very few that came out of Lincoln Place that I think you would ever find in any kind of criminal activity or any kind of, you just don't find it. When you see an Armenian name that has done something illegal, it just almost shocks you because where did they come from? I mean, they weren't, these people were just raised differently. That's what I noticed. And I'm reminded of Hillary Clinton's book, It Takes a Village, because all of these parents raised the kids. I mean, if I walked down the street and I was doing something wrong, some Armenian would yell out the window and tell me I had to behave and maybe report me to my godmother, you know, whom I would be visiting. And so they would all do that. It didn't matter whose kid it was.
Down in Lincoln
Place? In Lincoln Place. You know, I'm talking strictly Lincoln Place now.
Well, I remember a lot of things that, as I was growing up, having parental direction more from my mom as opposed to my dad.
Definitely.
From my dad, I would, and he was a sweet, sweet guy.
Yeah.
From my dad, it was always, you really got to stand up and fight.
And never be afraid.
Never be afraid. Well, I don't know what I was going to be afraid of to begin with. I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I could understand what they had gone through because having had their parents killed over there and trying to relate to us, there was always that fear that they preached to me anyway.
Now, when you say killed over there, you're talking about
during the
massacre,
the genocide. Yeah.
And so, whenever my dad spoke to me, and incidentally, he never lifted a hand. I never got a spanking in all my life, and neither from my mother or from my dad. I did get a slap in the face from Mom one time because she found a cigarette butt in my pants pocket. But anyway, that was the only time. But as I was growing up, these are the things that I was told, you know, you got to stand up, don't fear anything. And I always wondered why, and then in my later years, I began to realize what had happened and why they were telling me what they were telling me. And so, in growing up in Lincoln Place, I felt that I had to be the very best, and I've always felt this way in anything that I did. And I guess it was because I had to be, you know, as I was growing up, that was instilled in me. Whatever you do, you better do the best you can, you know. So, that basically, is there anything else that you...
Well, I was going to get back to some of my... things of the, well, like I mentioned before, you won't find anybody, or you will find very few people of our generation who have grandparents, who ever had grandparents, who have memories of grandparents. And I think of, I was thinking of Richard's mother. She came here in 1908, and most of these people came without papers, as far as I know. By that, I mean no birth records, nothing. So when Paris had to apply for Social Security when she was 65, we had no way of proving that she...
No, Paris was her...
His mother.
Oh,
I'm sorry, yeah.
Beautiful name.
Yeah, isn't it? I love it. I would have named... If I had a girl, I would have named her Paris, except I think my mother would have been angry. But Paris, they wanted to... You know, we couldn't establish a birth date at all, so you couldn't get Social Security for her. And they asked all sorts of records for whatever kind of information they can get. But when they came, they would just make up figures. I mean, if they asked her how old she was, depending on what you needed it for, like she might have said 20 when maybe she was 16 or something like that. I mean, because they had to, you know, what's required, and that was the date they gave. And the way we remembered, or the way she established her birth date, and I thought this was so interesting, she remembered the boat out of the clear blue 3 or 4 months after we applied for Social Security and just couldn't make any headway. She remembered the name of the boat she came in on. So I called them. I called the Social Security Administration, and they said they would do what they could. Well, they went back and checked, and I don't remember what they call it, but it's the list of passengers. And they were able to check that from 1920, from when she came in, and they had on there Paris Kasparian, 12 years old. So then they accepted that as a birth date. 1908 had to be the year she was born. And they asked, you know, well, what shall we use for the month? Well, they used a month that had already passed, so she says, well, give us the date that you can remember. And she said, I can remember my son's birthday, Richard. So she gave him May the 7th, and that's how Paris's birth date was established. I always thought that was kind of a neat story, so I share it with you.
she lived to be 91.
Well, she just died 2 years ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
She was neat, very neat, strong lady, legally blind all her life, and finally became permanently blind due to what I feel was a botched operation. But she was so independent because even though she was legally blind, we just came to accept that. I mean, she went places on her own. She had to go pay her bills at Famous and Bard, and she got on the bus and she went. She wasn't dependent on anybody, and very strong-willed and determined not to be dependent on anybody. I thought that was a really neat characteristic. Miss Dad was an extremely, and she was very strong-willed, so I didn't always get along with her because I'm strong-willed, but we did get along, and you know, for the most part. And Pop was just, his dad was an absolute jewel. I mean, he was just the sweetest, gentlest man I have ever met. Never said a bad word about anybody. Wouldn't wait on people. Men, you know, you said something about, you know, the father, your mother did the raising. I think most mothers back then did the raising. That's just the way it was. And the fathers didn't do things. And if you were to hear that now, you think, oh, you know, that's terrible. Pop never would get up from there to bring a coffee pot and pour over here. It just wasn't his role. He wasn't arrogant about it. He just didn't.
None of the Army.
None of them.
None of the
No, it just, well, my dad was a cook, so that's different. But they just didn't. And they didn't cook. You didn't know if he knew how to cook. But one day he was here in this house, and I was running around chasing kids hither and yon. And he called me and said, Susie. And he, you know, in Armenian, he says, Egud, and I came, and I said, what you want, Pop? And he says, I fixed you breakfast. And he had fried 2 eggs and made toast and made coffee. He says, you've been working all morning, and you haven't eaten anything yet. So I said, Poppy, you cook this? And he just kind of chuckled. He would always just twinkle, you know. And when I told Paris later, I think to the day she died, she never believed that Pop had ever cooked anything, right? I mean, he was really, really... quite a guy.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if those are helpful to you or not.
It's very interesting stories.
Yeah, I think all of these old timers, I mean, you hear some interesting stories. We sat at a wedding one day with a bunch of people who were raised in Lincoln Place, and they just hopped from one story to another, and I would give $1,000, I think probably more, for a tape recording of that evening. And to see these men who were all successful and prosperous, who were raised in relative poverty, although they didn't know it, sit back and say, I wouldn't trade my childhood for a million years. And it was all about Lincoln Place, that community. I always felt like an outsider, even though I visited in the summer. But it was just their collectiveness that they had, that even as an Armenian, I felt like an outsider, because it was just their little private center, just their community.
Well, we were the kids from across the track, the wrong side of the tracks, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They,
by Nesco or Nesco.
Yeah, it's all first generation, you know.
Literally across the tracks, and our.
And literally, figuratively,
yeah,
everything.
Right, and what was I going to say?
Well, while you think of it, I'm going to tell about Chris's bakery, my memory.
No, I've got some notes on that, too. But we had a lot of good athletes who came out of Lincoln Place, a whole slew of them.
That need to
myself.
Excel again, I think.
I just talked to Ruben Mendoza.
Okay, he's a soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And they all needed to excel.
Mm-hmm.
And you find
George that Gages.
And a lot of first generation
George,
people.
A couple doors down from me, so I know him real well. And he was on the 1940
basketball state championship.
I feel.
See, I followed these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I
feel that anybody
Adolfian,
who
I played with didn't play with Philip. Philip lived Andy Philip lived across the alley from me. In Lincoln Place. So, and as I was growing up, I played basketball in a community center with Andy, Philip, Agokin.
I think anybody Parsagan, who wasn't raised first generation.
Mark Carrion, the whole kit caboodle.
John.
You know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John lived.
Have you talked to...
four or five houses. He lived on the same street I did.
A great storyteller is the lawyer, Navarrete's husband.
Oh, Kachigian?
Kachigian. Have you talked to him?
I haven't, but there are people in the class that
He's
have.
A great storyteller. Mm-hmm. He really is. He would have a lot of neat memories.
I have a lot of memories stored, but it, you know, just trying to
I try to rattle out them when you talk.
I remember Mom used to send me to Chris's bakery with the Sunday dinner to be baked in the big ovens.
In the brick oven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had a relative that supplied the ties, railroad ties that they used in the creosote ties, the old ties, and they used to use these ties of, for the oven.
If you wonder why everybody comes out of there with
cancer. That provided a fire for the ovens.
You know, Chris, when you would go down there and you'd earn your bread and you make this big pita bread, and nothing ever tasted like Chris's bread, no, not before or after. It was big, like a big platform, a platter. And he would take his toothpick and had his jaw all rolled down. He took this toothpick out of his mouth and poked his holes into the bread and put the toothpick back in his mouth and baked this bread. And then when they brought it out, he wrapped it up in newspapers. That's how you carried your bread home, wrapped up in a newspaper.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
I think of it now. It seemed pretty normal to me back then. It strikes you as pretty strange right now.
That does.
But when you think of it, and of course, you know, during the holidays, you took your turkeys down there to be baked at Chris's, right? And the pastries, the big pastries.
I don't think we could afford turkeys at the time.
I heard turkeys, but maybe I'm wrong. Scratch turkeys, but definitely pastries.
A lot of bakery goods. Yeah.
Now I know that through talking to people from Lincoln Place, I had heard that Chris would do these sorts of favors in return for food from...
Maybe some of the wives?
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
Because I know that he was a bachelor.
That's very possible.
He wasn't really a bachelor, actually. He had a wife and a child somewhere.
No.
Didn't he was trying to get out, or were they killed?
No, he had some relatives. The Antones, I believe. Anovich. They shortened their name to Antone. But he'd go there for his dinners and whatnot. And as you described, some ladies would also bring meals to him, so he was a very nice man.
Now, was he Armenian?
No, he wasn't. I think he was either Macedonian or Bulgarian.
They had a little clubhouse there where they did dances. I guess you've heard that from, yeah.
My dad had a coffee house.
Yeah.
And as I was growing up, coffee house with the there were two businesses downstairs, a coffee house and there was a tavern in the same building. And above was a series of apartments and one suite of rooms. And my dad owned this for a long period of time. Eventually the place burned down. But as I was growing up, I did all the painting of the rooms, my brother and myself. We did the painting of the rooms. I was maybe 15 years old, something like that. And my mother used to change the sheets for the bachelors that lived up there. And most of the people that lived up there were Armenians. The tavern was run by an Armenian who was murdered. And this is kind of interesting. My dad found the body, and there was a story in Detective Magazine. Many years ago, I don't remember the years, but an Armenian guy murdered this Armenian owner of the tavern for jewelry and money, and was sent to prison.
In your papa's coffee house, all the men would gather.
Yeah.
Was it Turkish coffee that he made?
Yeah, they made Turkish.
Yeah, he didn't know how to make Turkish coffee, evidently.
But anyway, the old timers used to come to the coffee house, and my dad would make coffee for them. He had a little two-burner stove in the back. We had an old National cash register, as I remember, and cigars he sold, candies he'd sell, and they played cards.
They played tabloid, which is
backgammon. And they played backgammon. And so the days were spent, most of the Armenian guys who, say, worked at the steel mills, any time off that they would have, they'd go to the Armenian shop, coffee shop, and spend most of their days.
And it had an outside yard,
an outside garden where they'd sit and drink their coffee. And so I would serve them and make Turkish coffee for them, as I remember, and it was Nikola cup.
Did your dad get a cut of the cards when they played?
Like, yeah.
When they gambled, the Nikola hand or something?
It was some ridiculous figure, as I remember it. And I remember counting the change in the course of, at the end of the day. And this was during, maybe 1934, 1935. And I would sit and count the change with my dad. These were the Depression years. And the take would be like $8 or $9 for the day. And this is how our family got along during the Depression, in addition to Pop working at the steel mill. And that, again, incidentally, most of the Armenians worked at the steel mills.
Now, I know in talking about the coffee shop, I mean, with the research that I've done about Lincoln Place, I mean, it just seems like either the taverns or the coffee shops mm-hmm. were just the main hangouts mm-hmm. there.
And but they weren't like they are now. Well, maybe they are, I don't know. But they were. They were another community gathering place for the adults as opposed to, you know, the kids congregated to the community house. But the parents, yeah, they'd be at the coffee houses or at the taverns. And there again, it was their contact. A lot of them didn't speak English real well. And that was, you know, their way of, I don't know, getting by.
Now, another thing that I know that kind of separated or even brought together people, the community of Lincoln Place, was food.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember anything about the different foods? And
they would have picnics, and they would cook, you know. And my dad was a great cook, now. And even if it was, you know, and he was pretty active in some of the stuff over there.
That was the other side.
That was the bad side, I don't know. I don't really know.
Across the
track? No. Just they had their clubs, they had their cliques, you know, their churches. The church division, I couldn't even begin to understand. You'll have to talk to somebody else, and I don't think they really know either. But my dad would cook at some of the picnics, and he was just a designated chef. So he would make shish kebab, and they would make pilaf and salads. And a lot of the picnics either went on in the back of that clubhouse, but if they were big ones, they went on at Channel Rocks Park in St. Louis.
Well,
dump the kids off at the pool, because there was an amusement park up there, then come back, and it'd just be...
There were several parks.
Tubs of pilaf.
I don't know whether you know where Fiddler's... There's Fiddler's Park right off of...
Was that 15 or 13? I guess it's 13,
okay.
Right up here.
There used to be picnics held over here. There used to be picnics at Eagle Park. This is in...
Horseshoe Lake.
And Horseshoe Lake and Pontoon Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the picnics were held on Pontoon Beach, and there were designated cooks, parents of...
Now, was this just Armenians, or...?
Armenians, primarily.
Yeah. If you had a non-Armenian friend, you would bring them,
yeah. But I do remember, other than Armenians, the Mexican festivals that they had in Lincoln Place were kind of interesting, and this was all total Mexican. And it was a lot of fun in, you know, Spanish, Mexican music, and whatever else goes along with the festivities. They used to have a jailhouse built that people would steal the women, put them in the jailhouse, and you had to pay so much money to get them out of there. And that was an interesting thing that happened. There were Hungarians who had Hungarian dances at the Hungarian Hall. We also used the Hungarian Hall for the Armenian dances. There was a place called Shepetsy's. There's another hall in Lincoln Place. They never did use the community center for dances.
That kind of stuff, no.
And I don't know
maybe
why.
Maybe Miss Prather wouldn't let them.
Well, the only area we had would be the gym, and it wasn't suitable for that type of thing. But most of the dances were held at Hungarian Hall, I believe.
Getting back to the food that I remember, I want to get to the grape leaves. Some of the people, they eventually started growing grape leaves, but they would look for them in the wild. And one of the places they found them was up at Sunset Cemetery. So, and they taught us that the best time to pick them was last week of May, first week of June, because that's when they're smaller and more tender. And so they would go there. They happened to be in Memorial Day weekend, would be the ideal time to go. And these old gals would be up there, you know, getting the priest would be there sitting under a tree waiting for people to come so he can tag them for a few bucks to bless the graves. As soon as those graves were blessed, those gals were down there with their shopping bags because they didn't want somebody else to get the best grape leaves. And, and even my mother would just real quick give me my bag and send me down there to pick grape leaves before the other gals came, you know, because then this was sort of a thing they did. I mean, they'd all be down there. I can't imagine what the non-Armenian community thought when they'd come on Memorial Day and see all these ladies down there by the creek picking leaves, but that's what they would see.
And all of this rubs off
Yeah, I pick them down when I go anywhere, on the golf course.
The last time we went to Sunset Hill, we did that.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to switch this over before it runs out.
Okay.
And we'll pick up right there.
Okay.